Hello, everybody, and welcome to Kentucky Ag Matters, a podcast designed to inform and educate both producers and consumers about all matters affecting agriculture. On this week's show, we visit with Justin Mooney, Supervisory District Conservationist with the Natural Resources Conservation Service. And as always, we'll wrap things up with this week's timely tip. Thanks so much for joining us. We hope you enjoy the show. Hello, everybody.
Hey, Jay.
Hey, Jay.
How's David and Vicki doing today? I usually ask one of you, but it's been so long since I've seen either one of you.
Yeah.
It has been a minute.
Yeah.
Vicki's got the giggles this morning, so it could be interesting.
Is she the only one?
No, not much. She makes me giggle. That's a problem. That is a problem.
Well, that's okay. It's been a long time since we've been together.
It has.
This is the first show that we have recorded as national award winners.
That's right.
That's right.
Talk about a humbling experience. I know it was for me, and it was for each of you two as well. But to be honored as a national award winner for a NACAA Communications Award was very, very special.
It's yep.
Something I think it was a first for Kentucky actually to win
one
of those communications award, and Kentucky won too.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
The same time. Lindy Huffman, our co-worker up in northern part of the state, was also a communications award winner, and mm-hmm. we want to celebrate her just like
That's
we do
exactly
ourselves.
Right.
Oh,
you
absolutely.
Know, I have been the state chair for the communications awards for 12 or 13 years now, and I've enjoyed my time doing that. Just, you get to see a lot of the things that agents are doing across the state, and then you know, and you kind of get to share when they're recognized at the regional and the national level. It's you get to share that with them, and we've had some national finalists before, but in the years that I've been chair, we've not had a national winner in communications, and so it was really cool to have two this year, and it was, of course, being able to be a part of our team that was, mm-hmm. you know, fortunate enough to be one of those winners was pretty, like you said, humbling. Honored and humbled is what I think that's the words that I've used since we've won.
Pretty good birthday present, I thought.
That's right.
Absolutely. So.
David couldn't even get mad at us for singing to him because we had just won.
We got the whole room to sing to him,
yeah,
actually.
Yeah, it was even better. That was even better, yeah.
But, of course, this show's airing in September. We actually won that award back in July, but because of our schedules and traveling, we had recorded a lot of shows in advance. And this is the first time we've been together since that honor. So
that's right.
Kind of neat thing. A lot of things have taken place since then. We've all had state fair assignments, and we've all been in and around and traveling a lot this summer. And mm-hmm. time to get back together and get busy for fall programs.
That's right.
Sounds good to me.
So got a guest with us today, Mr. Justin Mooney. Hello, sir.
How are you doing?
Doing well. We've met before, but I know this may be the first time you've met David. I know you work with Vicki quite a bit, mm-hmm. but why don't you just tell a little bit about yourself and about your position with NRCS?
Well, first of all, my name is Justin Mooney. I am the Supervisory District Conservationist. Regular district conservationist, I am actually the supervisor for 8 counties. We cover Union County, Henderson County, Davis County, Hancock County, Ohio County, McLean County, Hopkins County, and Webster County.
That's impressive just to be able to name all those counties.
Right. Yes.
When I'm trying to do that, I'll always forget one.
I go up the river and then back down.
Hey, he's got a method.
He's got a method. I like it.
So, you know, as of right now, I've got somewhere around 14 employees, if you count partners. It can be a handful. We don't have offices in every county, but we're always working in every county. So it can be hard to manage people when you don't get to see them at a daily basis. Other than that, that's kind of the majority of my job is making sure my staff has what they need, the training that they need. When there's problems, you know, make sure to be able to handle those, and then report to my boss, which is in the Madisonville office, actually. So for Area 1.
Justin, why don't you just give a little bit of background on your time with NRCS, because you've been with them for a while now, but you know, just kind of tell about where you started and how you got to where you are now.
Well, it's kind of been a long road. In 2006, the summer of 2006, the DC here in Webster County, kind of basically come over, and he knew that I was interested in what they did, and said, you need to probably apply for this job. And I did. I got an interview. Luckily, I got the position. I hadn't graduated in college yet, so the district was really good about working that out so I could finish college. The other thing was that position at the time was a partnership position, which will tie in with partnerships later, but I was a 50-50, which means half of my money come from the local conservation district and half of my money come from federal funded grant. I was actually a 50-50 for 5 years. Took a technician position on with USDA in 2010 in Davis County. Worked as a technician for about 4 years. And then come back to Webster. Worked as a soil con, which is a soil conservationist. It's basically a DC in training. Mm-hmm. One of the requirements when you're a soil conservationist is they have to move you. So I run my stint out of Webster County, and they moved me to Ballard County. And then while I was there, we went all the way down to Fulton County and actually Hickman County and worked there. So I kind of felt like I'd seen the extreme west of the state. And by the way, if you go down there, it's not West Kentucky, it's Western Kentucky.
Or that's far right. west.
Or far west. That's so right. It is a little bit different. But at the end of the day, Western Kentucky in general, most of the time, falls a little bit closer to a lot of cropland. We have a lot of those mm-hmm. same things. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot of similarities. So it was not a hard change. At that point, it was up to me if I wanted to move up or stay where I was at, and I took the leap of faith, I would call it, and went to Indiana and worked. I actually worked in Warwick County, which is right across the river. I worked there as a DC there for about 3 years and had the opportunity to come back home. I live here in Dixon in Webster County, so it was a great opportunity for me and the family, and so I took this position and trying to maybe move up a little higher if I can. So,
well, you've done a good job in everywhere every county you've been in, and I mean that's proof, because you got to come back home, and I think that's one of the things with NRCS. A lot of times is you got to move off, but oftentimes you do get to come back home. Now, was you a co-op student when you were in high school too, or?
I was a co-op student, but like most co-op students in Webster County on the family farm, you co-opted on the family farm, which okay. means you just worked on the farm.
Well, the reason I ask is because I got my start in the ag career by being a co-op student for the Conservation District here mm-hmm. in Webster County. And so a lot of Webster County ag kids, I call them, have kind of went through that program and kind of got in the direction of going into agriculture, and a lot of them are still around here working in some form or fashion. And so it's kind of cool to see that as I've gotten older, get to see how instrumental that they've been in kind of helping kids and encouraging ag careers.
Mm-hmm. And it's nice that you said that about Webster County. Webster County has the co-op program, and they've been very involved in the past. As of right now, I've got four NRCS full-time employees that has either done something with Webster County or got their start in Webster County. And that's not counting the area. So Webster County as a whole has always filled in a lot of spots in the NRCS. Mm-hmm. So I think that goes to say that's a good thing. But then the surrounding counties around us, we have just as many. So it's a lot of people think that you have to move a lot, and sometimes you do. You have to maybe take a few years, but that's a great learning experience.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I fought it at first, and I feel like it was probably the best thing I did.
Yeah.
Learned different areas of the country, learned different farming methods. You see a whole lot more aspects. In Warrick County, I learned a lot about urban ag and what could be done there. With the city of Newburgh there, I mean, we did lots of projects on 2-acre lots. I didn't know we could even do it, but we can, you know.
Yeah. Sure. You're talking about the employees that have come from Webster County, and talk about your employees in general. You mentioned that you supervise right now 14 different employees. What are some of those positions, and how do they relate to our producers?
Well, your main employee that most people associate with is usually your district conservationist. I have four for the 8 counties, which, you know, you can kind of divide that out. It sounds like we can divide two, but not all of the logistics works out sometimes. Sometimes we have a DC that's over 3 counties, even though we could break it up to two. As of right now, I've got 3 soil conservationists, which is DCs in training. The great thing about that is the 3 that I have are GS9s, which is the higher of the pay scale there. And most of them are actually pursuing the wait until some of the other DCs retire. So I'm hoping that you don't have to learn anybody new in that system. I'm hoping that maybe as soon as the position comes open, they can go into it. And then the one that you see out in the field doing a lot of the work is probably the soil conservation technician. Although it's a lower scale on the job, it's probably the one that does the most work. It gets conservation on the ground. It's the person that deals with your contractors, helps you, you know, get your designs and everything. So they're the one that you see a lot of times, and the soil cons are the ones that does a lot of the stuff behind the scenes. So, right now we couldn't do any of this 8 county work unit unless we had our partnerships. And the conservation district's the biggest reason for this. That position that I had as a 50-50 has now become a 75-25, which means 75% comes federally funded and 25% comes from the district. And I have 5 out of my 8 counties that has those. Keep in mind, I don't have but actually 7 offices. So I did have 6 out of the 7 with one county sharing a 75-25. So there's a lot of ways that you can do that position. It's a grant position guaranteed for 5 years at a time. We're probably one of the only work units that has that many 75-25s in our work unit. So,
but the workload in the conservation that's going on the ground is the reason that you have those positions, correct?
Yes. The workload has been steady. It's been steady for a long time, but now it's kind of across the 8 counties. It's kind of seems like when I was younger, we had a lot in one county or the other. Now it's more dispersed. Maybe not so many in one county, but if you look at a whole, we still are doing a lot of work.
And, you know, we've mentioned conservation practices. We've talked about the ground. We've talked about the boots on the ground folks, but for our listeners that are, maybe some of these listeners may not have ever even met their conservation folks or worked with you all, why don't you just explain a little bit about what are the conservation, you know, programs? We kind of put that all in one area, but there's so many different areas in there. And so just talk about the different programs that you all have done in the past and the purpose for those, and then maybe some things that you're working on or maybe some new things that may be coming down the pike that folks can be thinking about.
Well, our biggest conservation program that we deal with the most is EQIP, which is EQIP to us, but that's Environmental Quality Incentive Program. We also deal with CSP, which is Conservation Stewardship Program. Those are the NRCS, federally funded programs that we do pretty well everything under. This can be from pasture seedings, cover crops, no-till management kind of practices. And it could also be structural practices such as waterways, water control sediment basins, We do grade stabilization structures, even waste management under that, which would be building a manure storage building. I've seen composters built for chicken houses at times. The new thing that I would say is under that is the energy part of that. And now we're looking at being more energy efficient. We deal a lot with chicken and turkey houses in this area, mm-hmm. but it can be expanded to irrigation. It can be expanded to grain bin systems and dryers, which is kind of work hand in hand. You brought up a great comment. We kind of lump a lot of the conservation together. So when you walk into a USDA service center, there's usually 3 to 4 offices in the same building, but you don't know that it's any different because we work so well together. So typically you have farm service agency, which is mainly your farm records, but there's also some programs there that they have. They actually take that's where your CRP is, your Conservation Reserve Program is, or set aside that it's been called all my life. they actually are the ones who administrate that, and we do all the technical assistance. So that program itself would not exist if we both didn't exist. So it's kind of, they'll come in, I want to sign up for this. We had to send them next door. They sign up there, and then they come right back over, and then they say, okay, well, what I need to do. So that's what we have to do. Speaking of that, we was talking about partnerships again. Because our area has a lot of CRP, we have been assigned a Quails Unlimited employee, which is not part of the employees that I actually manage. I do a lot of day-to-day, but it's not my employee. And he's actually stationed out of Hartford in Ohio County right now. And he basically does a whole lot of CRP planning and seeding, and has a wealth of knowledge where he's kind of more specialized in that area. Mm-hmm. So once again, we couldn't complete our things without partnership.
And when we talk about CRP, that, you know, we all know the Conservation Reserve Program, but some of the guidelines that go into that is, or the purpose behind that, the goal is we are wanting to make sure that we limit as much soil erosion as we can.
Right.
You know, we all know our soils are really important, mm-hmm. and you can't do anything without a good foundation. And even, you know, in farming, we know that's where the money is. I mean, you've got to have that good soil if you're going to be able to grow any crops, but also, you know, even building buildings and everything else. I mean, you know, it's really important. And these conservation programs, those are in place because we want to protect those soils. We want to slow down erosion. We want to protect those. We want to be environmentally friendly. And I think that story's not told near enough, because as we all of us that work in agriculture, we know that a lot of times agriculture takes a hit when it's not really us. And we don't tell our story enough of how much work goes in, and how much funding goes in, and how much priority there is in environmental programs, and like the conservation, or like you talked about with the nutrient management, or with like the composting, mm-hmm. for these poultry houses in this area. And all of that's done to be environmentally friendly, to do the right thing. And I think all these programs really, that's at the center of all the programs. There's different areas, mm-hmm. but it all comes back to being, you know, for conservation and environmental purposes.
Yeah, it all ties together. I mean, conservation is kind of where the core is. Mm-hmm. You can't just say conservation for soil conservation anymore. We do so much for wildlife, and we do so much for even in the urban area there.
You know, water quality is one of the big things I think of, right. that is always a buzzword, but all of these things work together to help each other.
Yeah. You can't have one without the other. I just mentioned water quality is what you mentioned, and I mentioned wildlife. One of the programs that I did not mention yet, which is we have an easement team, is what they call WRE. It's what was formerly known as WRP, which is Wetland Reserve Program, or Wetland Reserve Easement now. That is, we have a whole team of folks in the area that if you're interested in an area that maybe you fight the river on a constant basis, it's got cropland on it, or even a creek that commonly floods can even be an area, and you would do, you know, something that would be an easement. It's a permanent easement. The government comes in, basically buys your ground, but you own it still. Mm-hmm. And then they put wildlife-friendly practices on it. And then the idea is to take that money that the government pays you and go upland some and buy another farm. That's the whole idea aspect of it, but still by owning the farm that you still had. So it's a great program. It only fits some. There's the farming market kind of really makes the trend different. If corn and beans go up, typically we don't have a lot of easement programs. If it goes back down, we get back into them again. So that's just kind of how the market works and fluctuates.
Yeah. I think that's a perfect example of why farmers and folks need to have that relationship with NRCS, so they'll know about these programs and develop that relationship to the fact that, you know, when y'all are sitting there, y'all think about somebody that would be interested in a program, and you know, y'all make contact and it works out good for everybody.
And I think too, David, it's good to know that you don't just work with grain farmers, or you don't just work with land, you know, like say wetlands or whatever it is. You work with cattle folks. I mean, David's a cattle, you know, producer, and a lot of the programs and the folks that you all work with, there's a lot of programs for livestock folks. Mm-hmm. And I know when I back many years ago when I was working there, in my mind I thought it was, you know, it in at one time maybe it was more, you know, for grain producers putting in like waterways and the CRP program, but there's so many good programs out there for livestock people too. So talk a little bit about that too, if you don't care, and I may be jumping ahead of you. I know you've got some things there to discuss, but you know, just because we do have a lot of livestock folks in our listening area. And so,
well, just to say this is you're right. I mean, traditionally people only see what they see. So if you drive down the road, we've got a lot of cropland. Just take Davis County, for instance. You have a lot of cropland. I mean, you go down Frederica, you get past Frederica, you're heading down towards Utica. I mean, it's just cropland and cropland. The practices that you're not seeing is if you just go a couple hills over, there's probably a cattle farmer there that's a smaller cattle farmer, maybe 20, 30 head. But we've probably done all the infrastructure for the whole farm. And we do cross fencing, pasture reseeding, water lines, water tanks, heavy use areas. All these things is infrastructure to keep somebody to do rotational grazing, make sure that, you know, you're maintaining the grass at a certain height. You know, the great thing about our programs is we're not limited. You know, we do as much in this state of Kentucky with forestry than we probably do with cropland. Mm-hmm. The difference is the money that you spend. The money you spend on forestry might be less, but it might be more work. Mm-hmm. The money you spend in the cropland, you know, where you have a dozer operator, and so those are the big ticket items. But if you go to East Kentucky, like I went to East Kentucky last week, and seen that they have a whole different kind of clientele. You know, they might deal with invasive species in the forestry. Well, what does that have to do with us? Well, we actually have programs where you can go in and help identify, and then also have a plan to be able to eradicate these species to get them out so you can have better forestry health. Something that I learned was maple syrup. Didn't know that they did as much, but mm-hmm. they have a lot of maple syrup production. Mm-hmm. Obviously, being in Kentucky, white oaks and, you know, making whiskey barrels. Mm-hmm. I mean, so you have a specific species of forestry that you're dealing with. And like I said, it don't get showed up as much because it's a slower process. Right. It's not a corn or bean that grows every year and you're back in there again. Mm-hmm. It's something that takes multiple years.
I think that's one of the things over my career that I've seen, that the recommendations that the university has, and you know, we just kind of all are working together now to try to, in some of the programs that y'all have come out, especially when, because when I think of stuff, I think of cattle stuff because that's what kind of what I do. But, you know, some of the recommendations, rotational grazing and some different things, you see all of those kind of bleed together. And the programs that y'all are offering are helping with mm-hmm. some of the recommendations that we're recommending in our offices. I think that really has helped a lot.
You know, we talk about partnerships and the university's partnership, I guess, has kind of always been an unofficial partnership, more or less, within RCS and FSA. But I go back to the beginning of my career and the early days of the Ag Water Quality Plan. I remember when it was still an act. But one of the big things we all did together was help to write those best management practices for the Ag Water Quality Plan. And that's something that your conservation districts that you work closely with have a big hand in helping to implement.
Well, and you bring up the Ag Quality Plan. You don't get to do any of these programs without having an Ag Water Quality Plan.
That's why I brought it up.
And it can be updated, of course, when you need it. But all these best management practices is where we basically get our foundation for our conservation practices. Mm-hmm. Yes, there's some government assistance to deal with a tract of ground. It's majority of the time you run into a landowner or a farmer that only has X amount of dollars per year to put into improvements. You know, mm-hmm. at the end of the day, you have to turn a little bit of money, you know, to survive. So if you only have, let's say you had $30,000 for land improvements by the end of the year, well, $30,000 don't get you very far if you're doing a full track of ground. So you're doing bits and pieces, and by the time you get done doing bits and pieces, you might have lost half of the farm, you know, basically had the erosion, that ditch that could have been fixed, or that gully that you kind of been going around. Well, if you could fix it all at one time, now we're actually preserving soil at a faster rate, because, you know, so that's why the government assistance is there.
And that's been one of the big things in extension. Excuse me. We work a lot with non-producers. We work a lot with the consumer side of our clientele. One of the big ways that I have been able to educate non-producers on these different government programs is there are a lot more than just money handouts. Mm-hmm. And the way you tie that back, or the way I've always tied it back, is those best management practices. Yeah. It's all based on a science, and it's all derived for the improvement of our soil quality, of our water quality, of our air quality. And that's kind of the way I've always tried to tie it all back together.
And it's research-based information
mm-hmm. Absolutely.
That's going into those best management practices.
Right. It's all...
It all comes around.
It's all founded on good science.
That's right.
Yeah. I know if you look at a lot of our standards, it always refers to publication UK recommendation. Mm-hmm. I mean, nutrient management's one of them. Pest management's one of them. I mean, even down to prescribed grazing.
Seeding rates,
mm-hmm. Fertilized rates. I mean, everything is based, and then, like you said, we work as one. You know, they always said we're one USDA, but, I mean, we're really, in a lot of places, we're kind of one everything. One state, one conservation, I guess you would say.
And I know here, you know, we're constantly, of course, you know, Justin is from Webster. Of course, I'm from Webster. We've known each other. Well, been neighbors for years. Families have been neighbors. But, you know, we've worked together for a long time. And here it's constant. I'm always, you know, I'll be sending people their way and they're sending them my way. Or they'll call me and I'm like, you need to call the NRCS folks, or you need to call, you know, this person. And they do the same. And
I think you'll find that in lots of counties.
It is. Really. And we work together. I mean, I know that one day, we had a field day here, and Justin was part of that planning committee, and he was there. And at the end of the day, I was telling him about a phone call I had gotten about a farm, a landowner, and was having some water issues and had trees on it. And he said, well, you want to go out there and take a look at it? And, you know, and mm-hmm. so just we went out there and we met the farmer out there on the side of the road and was out there talking to him for probably 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. And that's those relationships and those partnerships are what we strive to do, because it if we can work together, then we can get more done that way. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad to have the partnership there. And like you mm-hmm. said, David, I think it's that way, I think, across the state and probably up in other states too with their extension offices and other partners too.
Well, you know, that's the good thing about working all together. And in agriculture, we do that a lot.
We do.
And we have to. You know, I know there in McLean County, Monica and the folks there at NRCS, anytime I'm having a field day, they're all about helping me and want to be a part of it. And same way with the FSA folks and Melanie Barnes there. You know, they're just, we all kind of have to work together. And you know, to get that information out to programs, anytime I have a field day, they're willing to come out and share the programs that they have to offer. And that's a really big help to the folks and especially the farmers there in the county, for sure.
It is. And a lot of times I'll have folks come in here. I had somebody come in here just this week and was talking to me thinking I was, you know, that they were at the USDA mm-hmm. Service Center. And I'll talk to them and then I'll tell them, you know, well, actually you need mm-hmm. to go down here, and I yep. tell them where to get there. But that's a good problem to have yep. when they yep. don't know
the difference. Yes.
The difference when they yep. don't know it, you know, when they think we all work together, right. that yep. means we're doing our job.
Right. Yeah, that's yep. true.
I mean, very we're
true.
Doing our job.
Very true.
And I think that's just a benefit for the folks that we serve and well, the counties that we serve.
Yeah, in our position, I feel like that, you know, we are the provider of a lot of information. Mm-hmm. And part of being the provider of information is to get those people to the right,
that's right.
places if they're looking for different programs or looking to improve their, you know, whatever, you know, their farm, you know, get them over down to NRCS and to FSA and to right. help them, you know, make that connection with those folks down there. So, I mean, it really works good all across the state, yeah. I feel like.
Yeah, it seems to work. It's one of those things where I think it works good across the state, and it works great in a lot of places, you know. Mm-hmm. And the reason I bring that up is because it's all on a lot of times the people.
Sure.
But, you know, people on ag, especially when they have a lot of ag background, and, you know, they understand each other, you know, and understand why we're here and what we're doing. And I think that just makes – that's why our partnerships work so good in Kentucky. I mean, we have Kentucky Fish and Wildlife partner employees or affiliates that help with various things like CRP and WRE. And then, you know, we also, like I brought up, the Quails Unlimited. And then, like I said, the Conservation District, which is how we're founded in the first place, is probably the reason why we're so successful, because we do have so many conservation districts. If we don't have an NRCS office, I've seen where conservation districts act as the NRCS office. Now, they might schedule our appointments or do things of that nature, but without them, we would not be able to do our job.
And some of the state funding, cost share funding, comes through yeah. the conservation district, right? Or does it?
It does. State cost share, which is, I always used to call it the little EQIP sign up. We used state cost share funds. Basically, we got that from tobacco money. Mm-hmm. That's something unique that I can tell you in Kentucky and Indiana. They do not have state cost share. They have grants where we had state cost share. There's still some different kind of they've kind of reworked how that money comes through. But that money does get used a lot on cattle. Mm-hmm. That's one of the big things that kind of, we used to do a lot of smaller cattle projects that way, because if somebody comes in and they didn't want to do the whole elaborate equip where everything's tied together thing, state cost share allowed you to do one or two small practices, and it assisted you to do those.
I know one of the, just going on farm visits, one of the things that I have noticed a lot of improvements on here and on the livestock farms is there are so many of the ponds that have been fenced out mm-hmm. and keeping the cattle out of the water and then pumping that water through gravity flow or however to get the water where it needs to be for the livestock, but keeping the livestock out of the water. I think that was one of the big things, one of the first things I think on livestock farms that I was able to really see go into place.
Yeah. Clean water is so important mm-hmm. in livestock. From a efficiency standpoint, and you know, for those cattle to really perform like they should be, you know, clean water is very, very important. You know, we've seen that time and time again. So fencing those cattle out of those places has been really beneficial, or putting in those limited access mm-hmm. points that are rocked and, you know, that doesn't stir the mud up and everything from that standpoint, and letting those cows stand in that pond is really not a very, it's not a very good thing. The cattle just don't perform like they should when they have clean drinking water. Mm-hmm. We put in several of the tire waterers around our farm, and the cows will go stand in the pond, but they'll come up there to drink, which is a good thing. Mm-hmm. And I think those, you know, being able to have those tire waterers like that, I mean, it's really, performance has really improved, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Bring up, you know, obviously we bring up all the different practices and things, and just to kind of give you an idea of, with EQIP and CSP, in 2022, the state received about $20 million worth of funding. Out of that funding, in our 8-county work unit, we had 107 contracts that obligated $4.2 million of the $20 million that we got.
Wow.
And that's just in our 8 counties. Now, mm-hmm. there's a lot of counties in the state. So I kind of took pride in that. And that was in 2022. And as of yesterday, we had already paid out $2.4 million of that 4.2. So that means not only did we allocate the money, but we're also getting it on the ground. Mm-hmm. And then also in this year, which, you know, it can vary, it might be varied a little bit, but I think we got somewhere, I think at the end of the day, I think we're going to get somewhere around $23 million for the state. Now, we had less EQIP contracts. We only had 68, but we still are allocated $3.5 million. It's went down a little bit because they spaced some accounts out. They kind of mm-hmm. tried to cover some other areas. And in 2022, that's the year that we used, that's where the funding come from the tornado. Mm-hmm. So we had what they call a significant event with the tornado, EWP come into play. So that it made my contract numbers to go up. They might have been smaller, but it made it up. But they put in $3 million extra even, which is not counting the $20 million, but that was extra $3 million that they put in for EWP. So I didn't count that in our state allocations, only because I want to say this. So the Inflation Reduction Act that got signed is going to be directly hitting, you know, for our conservation funding. And we don't know all the details about it, but they explained to us that we're going to double our funding. Well, doubling $20 million goes to $40 million, and that's what we're supposed to be looking at coming up this year, supposedly. So staffing is a big deal because we're already doing a lot with less, but with that, we're actually going to be able to get some staff. And I'm awaiting 2 natural resource specialists, 3 more soil conservation technicians, and 1 more soil conservationist, which would put me at about somewhere around 20 employees if you count my partner employees, which we're going to have in order to be able to mm-hmm. go through these farms and do good planning. Because at the end of the day, we typically do not fund everybody that signs up. Mm-hmm. We're at an opportunity here to be able to fund majority of the people who sign up. Mm-hmm. You know, we're going to be able to clean up a lot of these people that's been signed up for a few years that didn't get in. Mm-hmm. And I think that's significant because this is only a small window. It's, I think the funds have to be allocated by 2025, and then we get about 8 or 9 years to complete all the practices, you know. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to take advantage of it because, you know, this is the first time I've ever seen us hire employees at this rate, which is good. They're also looking at it as in look at the overturn. We've got stuff that has to be kind of put together, and you know, we got, as people, attrition goes on, you got people retiring or moving to other positions. Mm-hmm. So they're not afraid to hire the people because we need them in the long run. So it's something to kind of go to say, you know, I kind of pride that. And the reason is 2022 is when I got here. I started MRBI project, which is Mississippi River Basin and Program. It's the same thing. It's under EQIP. It's just a special pot of money. I brought in $500,000 a year for over 3 years. We're in the second year of that. I've also started the NWQI, which is National Water Quality Program. Now, that's funding that has nothing to do with regular EQIP money. So that's another $1.2 million over 3 years. Last year was only supposed to allocate $400,000. They allocated $800,000. They found some money, and we got to spend it because we was ready for it. Mm-hmm. So these are specific to those watersheds, but it's funding coming to here. So it's very much needed.
Yep. Justin, talk a little bit about, as we're kind of coming towards the end of the show, talk a little bit about when signups, when are signups for EQIP, when are signups for the different programs you have, is it all years, is it a certain time of the year, that kind of thing.
Any of those significant dates that you may have throughout the calendar year?
Well, typically, I mean, they always tell us it's what's called a continuous signup, which means you just come in and sign up at any time. But everybody knows when that signup cutoff typically runs, and that signup cutoff typically runs somewhere around November. What I tell everybody is when they pull in the field, the combine, make some phone calls, because that's usually when you find something is when somebody goes out in the field and they're combining. We get a lot of signups through the summer because they get low on grass or low on water. Mm-hmm. So we get a lot of those that come in. So I would highly recommend just come in and sign up at any time. But if you are wanting to try to figure out around when you always need to be thinking about it, is I just look at October. Mm-hmm. If you can hit October, typically you're going to meet that's next year's funding is how that's going to be. It seems like we're always kind of a year behind. And that's for all of our programs. That's the same way with CRP from FSA. It's a continuous sign up. You come in and sign up. Probably my biggest advice is go and see your USDA service center. You know, you need to be on a first name basis is what I always say. You need to be able to walk in and say, hey, how are you doing? Because there's so many different things that can happen, and there might be a small window of 3 or 4 months. Well, if you're vacation or if you're in a crop field or if you're not going to get that. So I always say, if you're driving through town, you need to pick up something, maybe you're out looking for parts, pull in and ask what we've got going. Mm-hmm. And I think that's probably some of your biggest help.
Yep. Well, and I think too, I know that I have talked to producers before, and I would say, you know, just call them. They'll come out there. Mm-hmm. They'll come out there and look at your farm and say, hey, I think this is your problem, because you may know that you've got an issue, but you don't know what may not even know where it's coming from. You know, you know, with water, it's so many things are water erosion, but you don't know where it's coming from, and you don't know how to fix it, where the outlet needs to be, and you know, just I encourage producers to call them, and sometimes when you get the crops out, and just go look at some fields while that window is there, to be able to really go in and look at your farm and look and see where some water problems might be and how you might be able to fix those.
I think that identification is a big, big thing, because it might not always be your problem. I've got a wet spot in a bottom that if you walk back and go to the next property over, there's a gully. Mm-hmm. And that's where it comes from. It's right out of a neighbor's crop field. So.
Right. Yeah.
You know, you mentioned stopping in and starting that relationship. We always wrap this show up with a timely tip. And we thought that would be a good timely tip for this week's show. It's, if you've not already done so, get out and start a relationship with your USDA service center. They're not going to be located in every county, but they are doing work in every county. So find that office that's nearest you that services the area that you work in. And just like Justin said, stop in, meet those folks, shake their hands, and ask questions. That's the way the information flow starts.
That's exactly right. And take the opportunity to do it, because there's a lot of opportunities there that you may miss out on if you don't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's always good to have that personal relationship. You know, we've talked about it in the past with the some shows that we did with veterinarians and other folks like that, but it's the same deal.
Same thing.
You know, you need to have that with your county extension agents. You need to have it with folks that work at NRCS. You need to have it with your local soil conservation district. You need to have it with folks that work at the FSA office. Mm-hmm. So all of those programs at some time or another can affect you, so be sure to stop in and know those folks on a first name basis.
And if you don't know who your person is, then go to your county extension office, because they'll be able to tell you who that person is, and oftentimes be able to even give you a phone number.
Yep.
So
that's right.
If you don't know, stop in the extension office. They'll be able to point you in the right direction.
Absolutely. That's a good place to wrap things up this week. So, Justin, we appreciate you coming on with us today.
Well, thank you for having me.
We want to thank you for this week's information, and thanks to our listeners for joining in. We hope you've enjoyed our show, and we'll make plans to join us again next week for our next episode. And until then, remember, Kentucky Ag matters.